Thank you for joining us for episode 68 of Project Geekology. This week, we're going to be covering something a little bit more unconventional than what we usually cover. We're going to be covering Mean Girls, but I feel like it's very relevant because it is something that was very popular and it kind of blew up, and it's an interesting phenomenon, and this is something that Dakota and I have seen throughout our lives, so I thought it would be cool for us to actually cover it in light of the most recent version of New Girls that came out. But yeah, I am one half of your host, Anthony, and joining me as always is
Dakota, and this is gonna be very fetch, guys. So I hope you are ready to talk about Mean Girls. I just want to correct you, Anthony. You said New Girls.
Did I say New Girls?
You just said Mean Girls at first. You said New Girls later on. So we'll let it slide. Everyone in the chat knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, isn't it technically the new Mean Girls, like the new girls, so
technically, yeah, you know, there's the new plastics. What's funny is that in the original movie of, you know, the 2004 movie, which is now 20 years old, which is crazy. It's going to be 20 years old sometime this year. It's
April.
Like at the end of it, in April, okay, so it's very, very close. At the end of it, they have like the new plastics or the new mean girls that are coming into the high school. They're going to be the new alpha mean girls in the school. And so you kind of, I don't think anyone was really expecting a hard sequel to the original. I don't know if there was any straight to DVD ones, but
there is. There's a straight to, I think it was like straight to streaming. It's like Mean Girls 2.
I had no idea that.
Yes.
Okay. I had seen
that one.
I'm a little like curious, but like scared.
It definitely embodies that straight to digital energy.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, I will probably never watch that, but I'm happy it exists, and I'm happy for you guys.
Okay. But so we're gonna have a Mean Girls timeline in the future.
After, you know, after this movie, after the 2024 movie, I do not think that that is possible, because it's literally the exact same movie just 20 years later and with a little bit more music. But we'll get to that in a bit.
Yes.
In a bit. Anthony, what have you been up to these past few weeks?
Well, you know, I went to go see the new Mean Girls, and that's where we kind of came up with the decision to actually cover it. But there's this game that just came out, and it's been really, really controversial. It's been kind of making waves.
I have a feeling I know what you're talking about. Keep going.
And so, yeah, the game in question is actually called Honkai Star Rail. No, I'm just kidding.
For those of you none of you are watching my face. I reacted like viscerally, like what the heck is that?
That's an actual game, though.
I believe you.
It's made by the same people who made Genshin Impact. But I had to mess up your anticipation. The actual game that I'm talking about is called Power World.
Yeah, that's the one.
So Power World, it's made some big controversy, mostly because of the fact that a lot of the creatures in it look like Pokemon. It's like Ark Survival, but with Pokemon instead of dinosaurs. And the gameplay is very similar to like Genshin Impact and maybe Breath of the Wild. But it's so funny because now a lot of people are trying to defend Power World by saying like, well, you guys copied your creatures from Dragon Quest, which, you know, I guess like in a way, like a lot of things are copies of other things.
Yeah, but, or homages, whatever, yeah.
Right. It's so funny though, like how very similar some of the pals that they call them, that how similar they do look to Pokemon. But
I saw a couple, like there's one that's based off of Anubis, the Egyptian god that looks just like Lucario. There's one that looks just like Eevee. Then there's a couple that are like that are just like,
right, there's one that kind of looks like Latias or Latios, one of those. Maybe like a mashup of both. But it's really made controversy. I mean, there's even people that are going into making it seem like the Pokemon models fit exactly with the Power World models, but then it actually was, I guess they kind of found out that person that made that video actually exaggerated it. It's so crazy. But outside of the controversy, it is fun. I mean, it is also like ridiculous in some instances, because with Pokemon, it's Pokemon battling Pokemon. But like, you throw out your pals, they're fighting the other pals, but you can go in and just swing on them with a bat or shoot at them with a gun or give pals guns. It's so crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. But You know, and you can build structures. There's different things you can ride on pals. You can even use pals as like weapons themselves. Like one, you can get this harness for this like fire breathing one that you get in the beginning and kind of use it as like a flamethrower. It's so crazy. Yeah.
I had heard that someone had already modded like Pokemon into the game.
And yes.
I think that's what caught Nintendo's initial ire.
Yes. At first they kind of weren't batting an eye at them, but when somebody actually went in, they did a fantastic job. They made their character look like Ash Ketchum, and then made a whole bunch of pals that look, you know, changed them to look like Pokemon. And actually, I think he got slammed with like a cease and desist.
I understand Nintendo's like cease and desist on that, but coming after the game as a whole, based on, you know, a couple lookalike Pokemon, even though the actual gameplay is pretty drastically different than, even if it's homaged or like, you know, you gain some sort of inspiration from the Pokemon series, the game is very clearly different.
Right. And the things that you use to catch the pals, they're called like pal spheres or whatever. You can actually like catch people with them.
Oh, excellent.
So
I'll be downloading this game very soon.
Dude, it is pretty funny. And I mean, you can play with friends, you know, you can create a server and just mess around with friends and stuff.
Have you played?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? Oh, nice. I had to get in on the controversy. Come on, man.
Of course. Yeah, before Nintendo takes it down, right?
Right? Yeah, we'll see.
I don't think if they do that,
I think that'll piss off a lot of people. I think that would be like a really bad PR move for Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. It'll put them in like, I mean,
it'll make him look like the big kid, like kind of kicking dirt in the face of a little kid, you know?
Kind of like a couple years back, Blizzard was in a lot of like deep water. Yeah. They're still not out of it. If you do that in like the age of social media, where people are very pro little guy, it's gonna be bad.
Absolutely, be bad. We'll have a Blizzard situation happening all over again.
Yeah, Nintendo.
But think about this, like. It started off with that thing, and then like the ball started rolling, and a lot more came to light.
You're talking about with Blizzard?
Yeah. Like I think you're talking about like the whole, there's like the whole like Blitz Chung thing.
Yeah, they had the whole Hong Kong controversy.
Hong Kong thing, and then that really pissed off people, and then a whole bunch of employees came out and were saying, you know, that it was like frat boy culture and that they weren't being treated well. So it really just was a ball that just kept on rolling downhill for them. And so I don't know if Nintendo's got something that they got to hide, but I don't know if you want to put any scrutiny on yourselves.
Well, the Japanese culture is very different in that respect. Like, coming clean about company policies is just generally not as common. So I don't think it would have that kind of, you know, snowball effect. But, you know, it is 2024. Who knows what would happen with something like that.
True.
But yeah, I'm interested in Power World. It does look like a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not somebody that really like gives into the FOMO. I've actually had Power World on my wish list on Steam for a long time, because when they first announced it, they're like, yeah, it's Pokemon with guns. I said, dude, this sounds absolutely ridiculous. I'm in.
That does sound great. What else have you been up to? You hit me with the
I don't think really too much, like, aside from, you know, watching the movie, you know, like normal day-to-day stuff, watching the movie, and then, you know, hopping in on the controversy of Power Worlds. What about you? Yeah. I mean, I know you've had a lot going on since we recorded. You were actually kind of in the middle of that process when we recorded the last episode.
Yeah, so for our listeners who don't know anything about my day-to-day life, I recently moved to a new apartment. It's about 25 minutes away or so, maybe 30 minutes from my previous location. And it's a huge upgrade for my wife and I. We got the apartment on the 15th of January. It's currently the 26th of January right now. We had our previous apartment all the way through the 31st, but we finally removed everything recently. We did a big cleanup yesterday in the old apartment, and we dropped the keys off today. So we're finally 100% out of the previous apartment that we've been recording in for 2 years. And I'm now in the new place. I have much better Wi-Fi. I was getting download speeds of maybe like 20 to 30 megabytes per minute. Now I have to pay for this now, but it's like 500 megabytes. It's just an incredible upgrade to my online experience, which is a big part of who I am on social media. We do these podcasts, and a lot of times we would be recording them. I'd have a little bit of lag, or I'd cut out, right, or you'd cut out, right, or something like that. I'm pretty sure it was my end mostly. So,
well, my internet, I get about like 700 plus megabytes.
Damn, Anthony.
Yeah, fiber is the way to go. If you're a technologically versed person, or you're just an online type of person, yeah, man, fiber.
So we have a Verizon Fios, which is fiber optic. Mm-hmm. We got like the middle package of 500 megabytes instead of 1 gigabyte.
I mean, that's still good though. I mean, honestly,
no, it's a huge upgrade from what we had, so I'm totally content with it for the time being. And it's cool because we can always upgrade or downgrade whatever we need to do later on. But yeah, so that's the sitch. I have moved into my new place. We did get to go see Mean Girls. I think it was like a week and a half ago, right before we started packing up and moving. And we had a lot of fun with that, so I'm excited to talk about that. What else? I'm currently working on my next big timeline project, which is like the Monsterverse. So Godzilla, Kong, Skull Island, that whole universe of kaiju monsters, titans, whatever. So I'm excited to like get in on that. We just finished Monarch, Legacy of Monsters. I don't know if you ever watched that, Anthony.
No, I had never gotten to watch it, but it is something that I'm somebody that has a long list of
things to watch.
Yeah, like I said, whereas your thing is movies and TV, mine is like video games. You know, that's why, you know, while you're watching Monarch, I'm over here playing Power World.
Yeah, he's embroiled in a like multi-company controversy.
I know, for real, controversy. Nintendo's trying to attack everyone now, just swinging wildly. But yeah, no, I really, it is something that I want to watch. I heard it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, a little brief review on my end is I really like the way that it wrapped up. There was like the first couple episodes are really strong. It has a like 3 or 4 episode right in the middle, and then the last episode really picked back up again. My biggest complaint is that, without getting into spoilers, is that every character in the show had an episode where they just wanted to quit, and then the rest of the team had to be like, no, we've gotten this far, we gotta go a little further, we gotta go to the next checkpoint. And it basically was that every episode. You know, like, they would get to the next checkpoint, they get to a new, like, I don't know, an airport or, like, a desert, or they're in, like, the Arctic, and they'd just be like, I can't do this right now, I gotta go back to school or something. And then the rest of them would be like, no, we're almost there, we gotta find your dad, blah, blah, blah. So it was like that, but for literally every character in the show. They each had their little moment of, like, I don't want to continue, and then the rest of them had to, like, lift them up or find them or, like, save them somehow. Yeah, it was a lot of that. But I will say that the actual timeline of the Monsterverse films is really well explored. I think that they did a really cool job of bridging the origins of the Monarch organization that like studies these giant creatures, like dating back to the 40s and 50s when the nuclear tests were starting to happen, and the modern day stuff that happened with post-Godzilla in 2014. So that was really well orchestrated, and something I'd like to talk more about in the future of our show here, if you're interested.
Oh yeah, definitely. That'd be cool. I definitely would be interested in covering more of the Monsterverse stuff. We covered Godzilla.
We did Godzilla 2014.
2014. Yeah. So I think it would be really cool to be able to actually go back and explore more of that.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever see the new Godzilla movie that's out in theaters right now, Godzilla Minus One?
I did not, but I heard it's really good. That's one, right? It's CG?
No, I mean, there is computer graphics in it, but like...
Oh, it's live. Like live.
It's a live action
movie. Oh, okay. I thought it was CG.
No,
because so it's all. I think it like Square Enix was involved with it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know too much about it. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I've seen plenty of footage from it, and I've heard it's probably the best Godzilla movie ever made.
Really?
It's the first Godzilla movie to ever get a nomination for like an Academy Award. Blah blah blah. So
that's crazy.
It's also the highest grossing Japanese movie in American cinemas, in North American cinemas, which is a huge feat. It's surpassed like 100 million gross in America alone on like a shoestring budget. Like I think they spent like 10 million on it. 10 to 15.
10 million? Dude, that's tiny.
And it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful. So it's a, you know, Japanese live action movie, but it's like, it takes the story back to World War II, like when Godzilla first shows up, and like, it's a war ravaged country. But anyway, I actually haven't seen it, so I don't want to talk and say something
right, about right.
it, and then just, you know, someone has to correct. correctly. I'm hoping to watch it this weekend because they're re-releasing it now that it has a little bit of Oscar buzz. They're re-releasing it minus color. So it's Godzilla minus one minus color. So it's in black and white, but like more saturated, and it looks like a old film. So it's I'm gonna probably check it out like that.
Nice, nice. Oh yeah, so something that I forgot to mention that I'm kind of in the works with it. I may or may not be able to do it this year. I hope I can. But something that I'm really like looking to do is I want to build another PC. Like I think it's time for me to actually like upgrade, go kind of like a massive overhaul. The PC that I have it's 7 years old, or it's going on seven okay. years old. Yeah. And it still works very, very well, but the age is starting to show, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's age is breaking through the cracks. It's yeah. slowing down a little bit more. It takes a little bit longer to boot up. Although, let me tell you, it's still faster than a lot of computers that, you know, you might use at like work. Mine still like blows those out of the water. But, you know, now I'm starting to notice that with some of the newer games, it's starting to run some of them on high, where it used to run on ultra on everything. Now it's not running on ultra as much anymore. It's running on high at best. Usually maybe medium, some games really? That are a little bit more graphically intensive on low, but it kind of ranges. It depends on how graphically intensive the game is, how old the game is. But I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, you know, games kind of just scale up. I mean, the graphics card that I have is a GTX 1080. We're all the way up to 4080, 4090.
Yeah.
No, we're several generations up, and so I've kind of been planning that out. Dude, I use my computer for everything. I know you feel this. I mean, I know that you're more on the Mac, but I guarantee you that if your Mac was starting to slow down, it was starting to bog down, that eventually you would look into upgrading. You know, that's just the nature.
My next move is definitely to build my own PC, because Macs are just way too expensive. Like, I'm using an iMac right now to talk to
right.
you. If you use that amount of money on a new iMac towards a new computer setup, like a PC setup, it's going to blow the Mac out of the water.
So tell me how much it would be to get an iMac today.
I'll look it up right now. iMac, I think it's 17-inch, 2024. Or no, it's, sorry, 27-inch. It's 27-inch. Okay, so they're actually not selling the 27-inch anymore. But basically, it would be somewhere in the range of $1,500 to $2,000.
$1,500 to $2,000, yeah, definitely. So I would say you could get a solid, like I would say, mid-high range to high-range PC, getting closer to $2,000. The one that I'm planning out, and like I said, it all depends. I'm trying to budget. I'm trying to shop around. It's not going to be right now. I probably will wait a little bit closer to income tax time. But that's looking closer to like maybe 22.
Okay, so that's right around what I would spend on a new.
So 22, it's going to give me, and that's just because of the build on a building. You could go more expensive with the PC.
Of course, yeah.
Like
yeah,
super, like, I mean, more like $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. But with what I'm going for, you know, I'm going to have like 64 gigabytes of RAM in it. I'm looking at a 4070 Ti, and then they released a new model of the Ti called Super. So I'm looking at that. I'm thinking about going AMD rather than Intel, but I'm still trying to like do a lot of research. I'm looking into bottlenecking so that, you know, I can get the maximum performance I can get.
What's funny is that like you're using a lot of acronyms and terms and different names that I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm like, wow, that sounds impressive.
Okay, so AMD is just like
vehicle.
So everywhere, you know, a lot of people have heard Intel, yeah. They come out with the CPUs.
Sure.
Well, there's one called AMD, which is like, you know, Intel is really good for gaming. They're amazing for gaming, but AMD is like really starting to get in there with the gaming. So they've got me interesting. And then bottlenecking is really just, you know, it's like the hardware, like you want it to like synchronize as well as it can so that one is not underperforming. You know, you want them to kind of right. get as close as you can to performance so that you know, one's not dragging it down. That's my current thing. And then I'm thinking that that's another reason why, like, I stopped streaming my second time around, was because I noticed that the performance, I was like, it was okay, but I was like, I don't want a bad, you know, I want it to look a lot better. So I was like, you know what? And I always use it, whether streaming or not, dude, I'm always going to use my PC.
That's dope.
So
cool, man. Yeah, yeah, I'm excited for you. That's awesome. Let me know how that goes. We're, you know, whenever you jump.
Absolutely, man. And then I'm bracing for Impact for Persona 3 Reload next week.
Well, I'm bracing for Impact for Mean Girls 2024 and 2004 this week. So I think we should probably get on that discussion.
Oh, man, do we really have to?
I don't even go here.
Right. Dude, that was so funny. Yeah, yeah, let's hop into it, you know, our unconventional episode.
Yeah, I don't even think it's necessarily that it's, like, unconventional, aside from the fact that it's not the general type of film that we would normally cover here.
Right, I mean, we usually cover geekier things.
But in a big way, like you mentioned at the offset, this movie, the 2004 film, is very much a cultural phenomenon. Something that has become part of the zeitgeist of our day-to-day lives. In some instances, there are some lines that you could say in passing, I would immediately connect that with Mean Girls. So I think that's a very powerful thing, and not something that most films can ever attain to. The 2004 film was so iconic. I'm just going to read over the cast just because it's incredible. Lindsay Lohan as Katie Heron, Rachel McAdams as Regina George, Tina Fey, who also happens to be the same character, Miss Norbury, in the new film, Amanda Seyfried as Karen Smith, Lacey Chabert as Gretchen Wieners, and the list goes on. But Lizzie Kaplan as Janice. It was an amazing cast back in the day in 2004. I want to compare a little bit with the new cast. Like, what did you feel going into this new movie? How do you feel like the new cast was able to capture the magic of the original film?
Well, so the new cast, it was really interesting. And I guess I'm just going to throw it out there. But what really made this different, and I guess that they had to take this in consideration when it came to casting, is the fact that this one is a musical, this new one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know, and see, dude, let me tell you, I went into this one blind. I didn't know it was a musical.
Really?
I did not know. So I went, so they started singing and I was like, oh, okay. So they went this route with this. Okay. So
did you know that it was a musical the moment they started singing? Or was it like by the second song you were like,
by the second song and I was like, okay, yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. Interesting.
So the one thing that I'll say about the older one is that Lindsay Lohan, especially in that time, had this, like, you know, with, like, the very basic makeup that they gave her, like, in the beginning, you could tell that she still had, like, this, like, natural beauty to her. So the social awkwardness wasn't as convincing as with this newer girl. Whereas, like, you know, even with this newer girl, she had her own natural beauty, but I feel like she was able to play socially awkward a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Because she had a little bit more of these, like, plain Jane looks, more so than Lindsay Lohan does.
Yeah, 100%. I totally see where you're coming with that. The actress that they cast to play Katie Heron, which is Lindsay Lohan's role in the original film, I believe her name is Angourie Rice. A-N-G-O-U-R-I-E. I actually did not look up how you pronounce that, but it looks like it reads Angourie. So if I'm miscorrect, I'm sorry. But she's probably best known for playing Betty in the Homecoming Spider-Man trilogy.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Okay, so yeah, I looked her up. She did, like, the announcements.
Yes.
And you got to see a lot more of her in, like, the extended edition of No Way Home.
Yes.
Dude, that was such a funny experience for me. I was like, bro, what is all this extra stuff going on?
Yeah, what's funny about the extended edition of No Way Home is that if you go onto TikTok and look up Daily Bugle, I'm not sure, but basically, like, it's a podcast show on TikTok with, like, the actors, and they have a whole bunch of little skits that they filmed for or around the movie. Like, oh, this just happened, and this is how I feel, and it's always, like, J. Jonah Jameson, like, Spider-Man's a menace. But they have Angourie Rice as Betty as one of the lead people. So that's how I knew her best going into this. But I think she did a phenomenal job of playing that plain Jane girl.
Yeah,
I think maybe I need to watch it again because it's been a little over a week at this point. And I will say that this is a movie that you're probably going to have to watch twice, because especially if you're like an OG Mean Girls fan, because it kind of feels like a fever dream a little bit in the sense that, like,
Some segments, some sequences are definitely fever dream. Absolutely.
Like, there's whole sections of this movie that I actually like almost barely remember. And I think that like a lot of the musical aspects, like mid-film, I feel like I just totally, I'm like slipping in my mind. And I think so much character development happens in those moments that I feel like I really need to watch this again. But I'm excited to do so.
And we got, so in the new movie, the actress that played Janice also did the voice of Moana.
Yeah, Ali'i Carvalho. She's amazing. Her voice is incredible, dude.
And that's definitely a clue in for the musical. I mean she sings, so.
Yes. It turns out she's an incredible actress on screen and behind the mic because she did great in Moana. And I don't think that I've seen her in anything outside of her work in Moana. So this will be a first for me, but I think she did a really good job of playing Janice.
I do. I would agree. Like, she did have kind of like that angry vibe that Lizzie Kaplan has. I mean, Lizzie Kaplan is a lot angrier than Ali'i, but I still think that she does a really good job.
Yeah.
She made it her own.
You know what character I felt was pretty drastically different in terms of like the way that the character was portrayed? It was actually Regina George. I think in the original film, it's not played super straight, you know, like it's played a little bit more like a comedy. The original film, it allowed Regina George to have more slighter, like emotional takes or like smaller moments that like made her character more relatable. And I feel like Renee Rapp, who did Regina George in this film, made her a lot scarier. Like there were like whole scenes where like she was like yelling or like,
dude, her song. It was a villain song. It sounded exactly like a villain song in like a Disney movie.
Yeah, I know you were like, it reminded me of the Scar song from Lion King.
You know what's insane is like, I don't know why like that popped up in my mind too. Like, I don't know, like it was nothing like Scar, but it gave me Scar vibes. I think like the sinister, like it's not like, because like Scar is not the in your face villain. He's like a behind the scenes, like tactical kind of thing. And that's what like Regina George really is, like, you know, manipulating and kind of just creating her, just, you know, honestly hurting everybody. Like, she's
they have that scene early on where just after Katie meets the plastics, Janice and Damien are kind of explaining like, no, you don't want to date, what's this guy's name, Aaron, I think that's the guy that she's into, because he was an ex of Regina, so you don't want to get involved with that. And like, she's like, well, how bad could it be? And then like they have that whole musical where like everyone's acting like animals outside of the school.
Yeah,
she's basically corralling everyone. She's queen of the pride.
What do you call it? The Gretchen Wieners, like her love interest. Oh my God, I forgot his name. But he was kind of like with another girl, and then he was like picking through her hair like a monkey. And then Regina like gets rid of her and then puts Gretchen there, like, you know, like, oh, you know, you're not going to be doing that to my friend type thing. But yeah, it was really interesting seeing this movie in that light as a musical. But I do feel like, I mean, isn't there a Mean Girls musical? I feel like there is. I feel like that exists.
Well, it does now.
I mean, before that, I feel like it existed.
I didn't even know there was a direct-to-film or direct-to-streaming sequel, so that's news to me. But I really liked Regina George. One thing that I noticed throughout the film is that she really committed to the role of Regina. Like, she was actively gaining weight throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I definitely, like, by the end, it's like, when she gets hit by the bus, you could see that she's like a good 10-15 pounds heavier than she was at the beginning of the movie, if not more. And that takes a lot of, like, for a young actress, that's got to be really hard to, like, you know, commit to, you know, because you have a whole diet that you've had your entire life or whatever it is, and then you just drop that to eat Calteen bars.
Right.
I was impressed. And cheese fries. I was really impressed, yeah. And cheese fries, yeah.
Although that was her thing before the Calteen bars.
So yeah, I was really impressed with Renee Rapp. I also, like, her voice is crazy. Like, it was just, she had that like, very, like, sultry, like, velvety voice. It was really cool.
I feel like she slotted in well with that role of Regina. When I was looking at her, I wasn't trying to look at her as Rachel McAdams, but more of, like, the character role as itself. And I feel like she really did perform that very well, you know? She played her part well the queen bee of the school, just as Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really pleased that they were able to get her for that, because I don't know, I think she did a really good job with it. Gretchen Wieners is an interesting one, because I don't think I liked her as much as I liked the original actress, but I think that's because it was a musical. So one thing that like happens when you have a musical is that you devote so much of your runtime to song that you don't get the smaller details or the smaller moments that like are like interpersonal or that kind of like flesh out a character. And they did try to do it with song. Like there was that whole scene in Regina's closet where she opened up like the song box or like the music box, and there was like a nice little moment there where I really wanted actually to know more about what that whole side story was with the music box.
Right. There was a lot of emotion in that moment,
but it never really got captured past that point, if that makes sense. Like I never felt that it was like fully, besides the fact that it made you understand that this is a person who is obviously feeling inadequate about their lot with Regina as a best friend, you know? Like, you obviously felt bad for Gretchen throughout the film because she's trying to live up to a standard that she can't. But, yeah, I don't know. I felt like the original film did that a little bit better. I will say, though, that Amanda Seyfried's character of Karen was magnificently adapted in this new one with the actress's name is Avantika Vandanapu. And she's playing a character named Karen Shetty, who's just extremely vapid.
Absolutely.
Borderline, like, 50 IQ, if that. And it's amazing.
Yeah, she does play that character very well. It's very... And, dude, like, let me tell you.
I was belly laughing, dude.
I was like, and just... in the theater. Like, I don't know how she does it, but she has this blank expression that, like, it looks like there's nothing going on in her head at all, and like you could tell, and she's just like, it's like very like not robotic but very absent-mindedly. She's so good at it. Obviously Amanda Seyfried, you know, she made the character original, but this one she like really dumbs down this character, but that's what that character is.
Yeah, there was the scene where she's like doing her makeup and she's eating a grilled cheese, and then she like accidentally puts grilled cheese on her face and it gets like a little like grease spot, and she's just like, oh hey, that looks good.
Yes, for the Halloween.
I was belly laughing. What was the line in the song? It was so funny that like the song, she was talking about femininity being about, you know, being able to be whatever you want but sexy. And the scene that I love, it was just like, basically, it was just like something that she could cure with her like sexy feminine powers, and then they were like, that's not a thing, and she's just like, I did it.
Was it like sexy cancer or something like that? And it's like
sex cancer.
Yes. Yeah, something like that. And I think Gretchen was like, that doesn't exist, and she's like, I did it.
Dude, that was fun.
Yeah, she played that character very, very well. I will say that the newer Gretchen Wiener, like, I do feel like she was definitely like the middle ground when it came to Rachel and Karen. I always noticed this with the first one. Regina was always like the smarter one of the group.
More conniving.
Right. And Gretchen was always like kind of in the middle. Like sometimes she was smart, but then also a lot of times she'd be very dumb. And then like Karen was all just like full on throttle, just dumb. You know, so it was like varying levels of like intelligence. And so I felt the same thing with it. And she played that character in this new, the, what's her name? The new Gretchen?
The actress?
Yes.
Her name is, I'm looking at the cast list right now, so I don't know this off the top of my head, but her name is B.B. Wood.
Okay, B.B. Wood. I still feel like she does that character well, even though it's, this newer one's a musical, and I think they tried to do more with her, but I guess for the sake of time, they just weren't able to. She does get that, you know, they kind of caught in the middle, that jealousy when everything kind of starts to come to head, and Katie Heron is kind of, it's seeming like she's edging out Gretchen for best friend, you know?
Yeah. Another character that we haven't spoken about yet is Janice's friend, Damien, the one that Katie first befriends Janice and Damien. Damien is just like this extremely flamboyant, like the gay friend, you know, that is just so classic in these movies. And dude, so funny. The original cast had Daniel Franzese, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, as Damien. What's great about this new one is that they reuse so much of those original lines. Like, she doesn't even go here.
Yes, yes.
There's so many lines that were reused. But I think it's a double-edged sword in that, you know, like, you kind of want something a little bit different. You know, at a certain point in the movie, I was kind of hoping that it would, like, veer off and do its own thing. Kind of like we had with Scott Pilgrim recently. You know, like, we thought that we were getting an animated redo of the Scott Pilgrim movie with the original cast, but it turned out to be entirely different. Like, Scott Pilgrim literally dies in the first episode, and then it's about, like, you know, the rest of the cast trying to figure out what happened to him. You know, that was
right.
Really cool. That was a really cool, you know, like, redoing of Scott Pilgrim. And I was kind of hoping a little bit of that would have bled into something like this Mean Girls 2024 redo. But it was literally like beat for beat the exact same.
Right, right. And so I think in some ways that's what helped its score, but also hurt it a little bit. Because it was very close to, when it comes to the reviews, at least on Rotten Tomatoes, it got very close to the original as far as review, but like just a little less. And that's probably why, is that maybe some people were hoping for a little bit more, but it definitely, it wasn't a one-to-one, obviously, because it was a musical, but there was a lot of story beats that it was almost like, it was the exact same thing. I do like that they expanded a little bit more about Katie's time in Africa.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like that they actually did show her, you know, spend a little time, even if it was just a couple minutes in the beginning of the film, of her time in Africa. So it was a little bit more believable than just very beautiful Lindsay Lohan showing up. I'm from Africa. But yeah, so yes, I agree with what you're saying. Like, the musical did add enough of a difference where this was worth it, but I was hoping for just a little twist. You know, I think that would have been really, like, by the end of it, where, you know, she wins, like, the spring fling queen thing, and she's, like, breaking off pieces and handing it and throwing it into the crowd. Like, that was literally, like, at that point, I was just like, man, this is beat for beat literally everything that happened in the original movie. With certain changes, like, there's some really good changes in this that I think are good for the times. Like, in the original, the burn book, Regina, like, Xeroxes all the papers and makes copies of all the pages of the burn book and releases them into the wild. But in this one, she just drops the actual burn book and has people, you know, disseminate all the photos within it amongst themselves like people would do today. You know, I think
yeah.
That's a very clever way to redo that.
Yeah, the fact that everything was current with the time, you know, with social media, the TikToks and everything.
What was up with Megan Thee Stallion, like, showing up a couple times randomly? Like, I was so confused. Just like, she doesn't go.
They, you know, just needed that little one random rapper in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was telling my wife the other day, like, it seems like Megan Thee Stallion will say yes to everything, because, like, she's in so many commercials, she's in so many little things. She was in She-Hulk for that one episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's just kind of everywhere. So I think it's funny. But anyway, yeah, I digress. Ultimately, I think I really liked the movie. I left the movie with a smile on my face. I was just hoping for a little bit of a different story than, you know, the one that we're all very familiar with, if you've ever watched Mean Girls, basically.
Right, which a lot of, I would say a lot of people have. Something that we didn't even, like, talk about is, like, you know, our experience with Mean Girls. Because 2004, you know, you and I, we weren't teenagers quite yet. We were preteens. You know, this movie is out of our wheelhouse.
We were like, what, 12?
Yeah. And so I know that I'm fairly certain that this isn't a movie that I saw in theaters. I don't know about you. Like, when?
I don't think I did, yeah. I don't think I saw it.
Honestly, to say to you, do you even remember when you first saw it? I remember seeing it at a young age, and it might have been at your house.
It probably was. I remember having the DVD.
Okay.
We watched it together.
I think you were like, oh yeah, let's watch this movie. It's really funny.
I think I had seen it and I enjoyed it. introduced it to you.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It had to have been because I'm like, this is definitely out of my wheelhouse. I either saw it sometime on TV or Dakota showed it to me. So I was like, I was trying to contemplate on the drive home. I'm like, dude, when did I watch this movie? I remember watching it years ago when I was younger. Like, I remember seeing it, you know, before high school. So what would you say, Mean Girls, we've seen the OG, we've seen the musical, what makes this movie so successful? Why has it lasted this long?
So it's technically considered an SNL movie.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me because it was written by Tina Fey, who is an alum of SNL, and Amy Poehler is in there. So, you know, I know they're friends, but they're both SNL alums, so.
Okay, so I don't know if it's exactly an SNL movie, but I would consider Mean Girls among that. I don't know if it's actually produced by Lorne Michaels, so I can't actually say. But I will say that it has that vibe to it, where the writing is very much in line with that, maybe a little bit more serious than a lot of those movies, but not by much. It plays the story straight, and it plays it kind of like a early 2000s rom-com, but it has that DNA that's very much like SNL based. And I think that's what is like the magic sauce of the film itself.
Right. And the thing, because I feel like that era, you know, the early 2000s, we got a lot of teen movies, man. So many high school movies, so many college movies. Like, I mean, like everything all the time was high school, and they were all raunchy. This one wasn't.
Right. Yeah. It had like moments of,
it had that, moments
that edged into that, but it was more innuendo than anything.
Right. Like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sex crazed. And I think what it does well, like to me personally, what gave it its staying power is its interesting look into the teenage like life, the teenage mind, high school. Because while it is very humorous, let's be honest, like the teenage mind is insane. And that's a lot of this movie tracks so well with that. You know, we blow all these small things up into proportion. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, aside from a lot of the bullying, a lot of their problems were not, like, really, they were just typical teenage problems, you know? Like, it was just typical, you know, the teenage life stuff. And it was, I guess, stuff that a lot of people could relate with. But it was also something that we could kind of laugh off. So I think it's like, you know, if you're younger and you're watching this, you're like, oh my God, like this is totally true. But then if you're an older person watching this, you're like, yeah, this is absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe I really, like I felt this way when I was young too. This is ridiculous. You know, like
it is funny because it captures a moment in time a little bit, you know, like
it does too.
High school experience, even though it's a little bit more dramatized or a little extra.
Right.
You know that there were cliques, whether it was like vocalized, you know, whether it was vocalized or not, you know that you don't sit at that table, you sit at this table, you know, that's just the way it was.
Right. Dude, it was always like, no matter what, like it was, you know, the drama kids would always hang out with each other, the band kids, because they're all in classes together, you know, so it's. Or like you had the self-made cliques, kind of like what Janice and Damien were, where it was just you know, a group of friends that you guys weren't specific to any group. It was, you guys were just your own group, you know?
Yeah. I think more often than not that like I was in those cliques where I just kind of like fell into a group of friends, you know?
Right. Yeah. For me, I was never that person that really had subscribed to that because I hung out with the nerdy kids. I also kind of hung out with some of the skater kids. You know, nice. I had some like drama, or not drama classes, but I had like a stagecraft class. So I got connected with some of the drama kids. So it was just kind of like, I really just connected with who I vibed with rather than who they were as far as social hierarchy. But I still dealt with my stupid, ridiculous high school stuff, though. It's homework and whatnot and failing stuff. Not on purpose, but I tried, but I was just lazy. Yeah, like, I just feel like the staying power was its interesting look at high school and obviously exaggerating it a bit and making it humorous. But it, I guess it works because a lot of the times we exaggerate our problems. I'm not saying all the time. Some of them are real problems that should be dealt accordingly, but some of them we kind of blow up in our own minds, and that kind of does this in that way. You know, the way she visualized everybody like as if there were animals in the jungle. You know, Katie Heron. Yeah. That's what I thought was really interesting. And I thought it was cool that you suggested to cover this because, like I said, while it's not like, you know, Marvel or Star Wars or books within the normal wheelhouse, it was a big cultural phenomenon. It really grabbed a whole group or like a time period or a group of people. And I'm pretty sure that there's still younger generations that are watching it. And it does capture a time because, I mean, look at the technology, man. Look at the phones they had. Look at the things that they used. So it was really cool looking back and seeing all the flip phones and whatnot.
Yeah, it's an interesting little time capsule. I love stuff like that because the high school experience has changed in certain ways pretty drastically. Like, all kids nowadays use a laptop in class.
We weren't allowed to have that in class.
Bring it in. Yeah. So
if you had one.
So it's just a different world nowadays, and it's cool seeing how this exact same story can be told 20 years later with a whole new generation.
Right. Well, you know what? It fits so. It kind of shows you how things kind of don't change. The technology and the world around us can change, but a lot of the problems that we might face are similar. You know.
That's a good point. I really like that, actually. Yeah, it's a cautionary tale of how being a mean girl isn't very nice.
Well, spreading rumors, bullying, it's a double-edged sword because not only can you harm somebody else, but it can backfire. You damage your reputation by being that person, the one to talk about others behind their back. So it just doesn't do anything for anybody.
One interesting change, or not necessarily a change, but like some new bit of Mean Girl lore that they introduced.
The lore?
And the lore. We're bringing the lore in. Mrs. Norbury, Tina Fey's character, is married in this one to Principal Duval.
Yes, I was surprised.
That's actually something I was just like, oh, okay.
Because, I mean, there was... Because he was definitely...
Chemistry. There was a little chemistry in the first movie.
In the first movie, right? She had just actually divorced that summer but prior. She actually, like, they had come back from school in the original... They came back from school, or they came back to school from the summer, and she actually had gotten divorced that summer. So, yeah.
Not by him.
No, not by him. But he was definitely interested, like, you know, hey, you know, like, you know, if there's
That's
anything
right.
that you need, you know, I can be there for you. Yeah, he's definitely, like, interested.
He was putting on the wrist.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, they're actually married this time. Because, like, when he hit her with the I love you, I was like, oh, okay. So they're together.
That was interesting. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that was cool. I think that they were like, you know, instead of them being separate, they're going to be married this time.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those organic things that you have to, like, accommodate for when you have something like musical where probably, like, 40% of your runtime is eaten up by song. You have to make some necessary cuts in terms of dialogue, so probably Principal Duval's comments or the idea of him hitting on the teacher had to be cut, so they just got rid of that and changed up their dynamic as a whole to accommodate the new time constraints that they might have had. That's just my own personal theory, but I think what was really funny, there were certain lines where I'm just like, I was surprised by how much they kept from the original movie. When the mathletes did that, like, rap dance in the talent show.
Oh, the Power of Three.
It was the exact same song. What's funny, though.
It is so funny. I was laughing. I watched the original recently, and yeah, dude, it's so funny.
What amazed me was I haven't seen this movie in probably over a decade. Like, it's been a very, very long time since I've seen Mean Girls. So watching this movie and hearing that song from, you know, when I was a kid, basically, watching the original Mean Girls. And I was just like, that's literally, they got away with bringing back the exact same rap. So I thought that was really funny.
Talking a little bit back on Principal Duval, they actually kind of scaled him up. Like, when he talked about his time in teaching, in the old one, he had been an educator for like 14 years. But in the newer one, it was like added time. So I think it was like It was either like 24 or 30 years or something like that, that he had said, like, you know, I had been an educator for this amount of time for this to happen. And then they changed his line when he went to go break up all the girls fighting. In the original, he said, I didn't leave the South Side for this. But in the new one, he said, I didn't leave grad school for this. So it's like he kind of improved himself in that period of time, like he went to grad school.
Oh, that's cool. There was one line where I noticed, or I think I noticed, I might be incorrect here. When they had the Mathlete tournament and Lindsay Lohan was like the conductor, that was a surprise. That was nice to see her.
Yeah, wasn't that crazy?
When they had the sudden death thing, she said, this has only ever happened once before. In the original, if I remember correctly, I haven't seen it in a while, you might have to correct me, or someone else might have to correct me, I believe in the original they said, this has never happened before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. It's never happened before, yeah.
So this is, it obviously, like, it can't possibly be the same timeline, but, like, it's clear, like,
they make nods.
This has happened. Yeah, they make nod to something that happened in the past. So I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, there's definitely been... So in the newer one, there were some homages to the previous...
Yeah, you go, Clint Coco. All right, we should wrap this up.
No, man.
I'm actually having a fun time talking about this.
I know. It's so wild because, you know, coming into this movie, I'm like, man, what can I really talk about this to recover an hour's worth of podcast? But it's crazy because once you start talking about it, just so much starts to flood your mind.
Yeah, I was honestly really impressed for the most part for all the songs that they were able to push out. I think that they really did a fantastic job with set design. Everything felt very real. If I had one comment that was like not super negative but could have been better, I think they miscast Jenna Fisher as her mom. I just didn't feel like it was that much chemistry between the two actresses. Katie Heron's mom is Jenna Fisher.
Right.
But other than that, I think I liked everything. I really enjoyed the film. I can't wait to see it again.
Do you think that, like, you just have her, Jenna Fisher, so stuck in your mind as Pam Beasley?
I think a little bit, yeah.
The thing is, her character was very similar to, like, a Pam Beasley.
Yeah, it was very demure, very, like, coddling in a way. Yeah, I could see Pam Beasley still in her performance. Maybe that's what I was thinking of. It's gotta suck for actors and actresses who get typecast.
Yes.
So
you can't break out of it, though. Your boy showed that you can. Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Daniel Radcliffe has had some pretty good moments outside of Harry Potter, too.
Emma Watson has probably had the best career of the three of them in terms of, like, getting big roles. I don't want to throw any dunk. Like,
any last words about Mean Girls, old, new, both?
I think this movie would have done better if people realized it was a musical. Hollywood has learned kind of the wrong lessons when it comes to musicals since The Greatest Showman underperformed.
Which is sad, because I actually really enjoyed that.
It's a good movie. But it's because of that, trailers are no longer advertising that this is a musical. Like the Willy Wonka one that came out recently with Timothée Chalamet as a young Wonka is also a musical. It's not advertised as such, but it is. So it's interesting that we kind of live in that time where, like, certain truths are suppressed to try to boost box office viability, but I feel like those truths would probably boost this movie a little bit better. I don't know. I might be wrong. I'm obviously not, like, an analyst in that respect.
I get what you're talking about. It's funny that you bring up the Wonka. Though, like, I feel like going in to see Wonka, you should kind of expect it because the original Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory had a lot of music in it. There was a lot of singing in it.
This is much more of a musical.
Oh, yeah, I know. That one's much more of a musical. But it works really well. And when it hits to the point of the movie where, like, you hear pure imagination, like, you're waiting for it.
I haven't seen the new movie yet.
Dude, you got to.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I really think that Chalamet does a really good job at playing a young, kind of bright-eyed Wonka.
All right, I have to check it out. Anthony, do you have any last words about Mean Girls?
October 3rd, but not really.
That's another line that I was just like, oh, wow, they actually used the October 3rd. That's Mean Girls Day, you know?
I love that part, you know, I know we're like keeping it tight. I love that the song in the newer one that Katie sings about Aaron Samuels. And then there's just like that moment where she's like being pushed in a swing in the middle of class. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But honestly, if you're a fan of the old one, and if you're somebody that enjoys musicals, I do think that this movie is worth checking out. It does obviously do things to make it current with the times, but like Dakota and I have been saying all episode, it follows pretty much the exact same beats as the original, so it's hard not to like. Yeah,
some things it gets better, some things it doesn't get just right, but you know, it's very much Mean Girls. You know, if you like the first one, you're gonna like this one. That's just yes. How it is. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to us here for our 68th episode of Project Ecology. We'll see you in the next one.
All right, bye.